2/3 of men and about 1/3 of women are single. So I mean, 2/3 of women are in relationships under the age of 30. These women are either sharing the same man or they're dating older men. When men, like say, cheat in a relationship, they can cheat down. Meaning you'll see a man who's dating a woman who's a 10 and he'll cheat on her with a girl who's just not as attractive, but she's quick and easy and there's no commitment, there's no consequence. A woman, on the other hand, they tend to cheat up. Meaning they want a guy who's even taller and better looking than their partner because their evolutionary psychology is telling them, hey, let's try to get these good genes in here.
This right here is Michael Sartain. He teaches you how to build a network of desirable women and high status men. He's the founder of Men of Action, helping you forge a high status lifestyle and join the elite. He joined kickoff sessions to answer one question. Are men becoming weaker in modern society? We go detailed into status, wealth, how to become top 1%, social media, degeneracy, fitness, lifestyle, and even things like OnlyFans. If you want to build your influence in 2024, this podcast today is for you. What's up, people? Before we get into this video, please make sure to subscribe, like, and comment down below so we can get bigger, better guests for you every single week. Let's get straight into the video right now. All right, man, we hope you're all good. Let's kick off. So where I want to start is, are men becoming weaker today in modern society?
Well, I mean, that depends on how you look at it. I mean, it's not just the question is not so simple to answer. In a lot of ways, if you were to compare us to, men who lived during the Roman Empire, we're much bigger and stronger than those men are. If you were to compare us our like muscle mass of the average guy who goes to the gym compared to a guy back in the 1850s, we can probably bench press more than them. So are men weaker? I think what a better way to say it is, do men have the same boundaries they used to have? And a lot of times, and for that, the answer is no. As the Overton window in society continues to shift to the left, more and more things we find acceptable. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. It's good when it comes to suffrage and civil rights. It might be bad when it comes to, having 9-year-olds change their gender. So it's like, it's one of these situations where, as the Overton window continues to shift to the left, there's different things that we find acceptable. Our boundaries shift, our boundaries change. That's not always a good thing. And so do we accept those boundaries? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. The second thing is, testosterone levels in men have precipitously declined since, the 1950s. And you would expect that to happen because what happens is as the tech entrepreneur starts to garner more resources and becomes more of the wealthy people, as the tech-minded individual, the STEM field individual starts making a higher income, the engineer, the guy who doesn't work with his hands starts garnering a higher income, rather than, let's go back to the 1890s, the man who was the biggest and the strongest was going to be the most useful on the farm. He was probably the most likely to have the most access to women to marry and probably most likely to have the most children. So from a genetic standpoint, those guys with higher testosterone, and go even further back, a survival scenario, Pleistocene epoch, the men with the higher levels of testosterone, more muscle mass, more, focus, acuity, assertiveness, aggressiveness, willingness to go protect the tribe, to build fortifications and to go hunt. Those men had the access to the most, they had the most sexual access, and therefore they had the most children. Therefore, high testosterone was probably something that was passed along at a high rate previously, and now we just don't need it anymore. Like you don't need men with super high testosterone in every walk of life like you did back then. So are men having lower the better way to ask the question is, do men have lower testosterone now? Yes, and that's probably because of natural selection. There's fewer selection pressures against low testosterone. And then the second question is, are men weaker? I think what you're talking about, do men accept more as far as like their boundaries? Is polyamory becoming more common? Do we sit there and like as a society think that it's funny when Cardi B talks about robbing her, like drugging her clients and then robbing them and then we laugh about it, whatever? As a society, have we become weaker? I think the answer is probably yes to that because of the things that we tolerate now that we didn't tolerate previously, rightly or wrongly. But I do think it's, that part is problematic. It's just like, we just got to a place where some of these standards that we had were there for a reason, about raising your children and keeping crime off the streets and having people become productive members of society. And as we let those boundaries slide, we're going to see society suffer for it, I believe, in the future. And by the way, I'm not prescribing the term good or bad, but what I am saying is that actions have consequences. Yeah, men don't maintain boundaries like they used to. I agree with that. And I think men do have lower testosterone.
And man, it's a time delay too, right? When you make a change like that, so let's say you lower your boundaries, you don't see it immediately. It's over 50 years, 100 years. You don't see the impact of World War One and World War Two until now and in the future, right? It takes like a long time delay. So it's kind of like when you make those small changes and you're looking at, like, let's say people changing their gender at 9 years old, we don't see the impact of that until 100 years from now, right? You raise a lot of really good points. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Here's a really interesting evolutionary biology theory. Now, I don't know if this is true, but we don't have wars today like we did with World War One and World War Two, where like a significant portion of the military age male population in a country went to war and died. Like when you consider like all the men that were military age males, meaning these are the men who are going to be coming home, having sex with women, having babies. These are the men who are going to continue to populate your country. When you have a significant portion of them die, that can affect the ratios and the birth rate in the country coming back. Now, not so much with the United States. We lost during World War II, we lost 500,000 people in a country, you know, that had, a country that had over 150 million people. So that wasn't that significant. But for a place like Belgium,
man,
or a place
like
France, or a place like Germany,
or Russia, man,
when you have a significant portion,
because they're always in wars.
And again, so when you consider who are the first men to go to war, high testosterone men or low testosterone men, as you continually wipe out higher and higher testosterone men in Russia, in Germany, in France, and places like that, you're going to feel the effects, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 years later. You're going to feel the effects where these high testosterone men did not have the children that they normally would have had. And it gets passed along and you just see, like, I'll just be honest with you, I just don't consider French men to be overtly masculine or muscular. And I think there may have been that this may have been the reason for it. I'm just guessing here. Right. Whereas, you know, that's just a theory, but I mean, that's one of the things that you know, you can look at in biology and wonder, hey, is that a reality?
Dude, so you live in like Las Vegas, you're spending some time in Miami. I'm in Bali and I spend a lot of time in Dubai. Right. And a lot of people say that if you look at like a Russian couple, so Russian models, you know, Eastern European women, tall, beautiful, and usually the guy that they're with is sometimes can be overweight, out of shape, right? Not necessarily like the top 1% man. And a lot of people put that down to, over the years, it's been the best men in Russia to go to war, and some of them die, right? Because Russia have been in wars for so many years. So it's a combination of factors. So what are people are left with is the all of the rest. So
yeah.
You mentioned about testosterone. What's interesting there is I had this woman called Louisa Nicola on my show, which would be great for your show, by the way. She was also on Ryan Pineda's show. And she's a neuroscientist for hedge fund managers, traders, as well as athletes. So, you know, LA Lakers and so on. So Lakers, yeah. And basically, she put it down to environmental factors. So most men now are at their desk all day, right? And they're getting rewarded for their desk because they're sitting there 60 hours a week. They're living in dark climate. So I was spending some time in New York last month, and fuck me, man, the city is so harsh that I'm 27. The guys that were my age look 40, and the women that were my age also look 40, right? And those environmental factors put such a downward pressure on you that over a long enough period of time, that's when you end up unfulfilled, depressed, low testosterone, no fulfillment, right? Well, what we do, we literally speak to people on the internet for fucking fun, right? But that, as a result, has taken such a big toll on their life that's where we lead into this section as a result.
I think that's partially to blame. So in evolutionary biology, there's this thing called the phenotype. So you're a phenotype. You're a manifestation of your genetics. In the individual phenotype, not getting enough sun, not getting enough sleep would lower testosterone levels. But I think from an evolutionary standpoint, if you just kept selecting for men with lower testosterone to have more babies, then the population would start having lower testosterone. Does that make sense? I think that's also to blame. I think, like you said before, the tech entrepreneur who makes, let's just say, somewhere between $200K to $500K a year, he has more of an ability. Now, that's the numbers are showing us those aren't the men trying to have the most babies. But let's just go back. The guy who you know, sold books, now all of a sudden can have the middle class merchant career path that doesn't require as much testosterone. That guy could make as much money as the farmer. And so because of that, then I think as we switched further and further away from an agrarian society, whereas 1.98% of the American population was involved in some agrarian nature, and now it's like less than 1%, I think as we moved away from that scenario than less. You just didn't need as many men to bale the hay. And so men with a lower testosterone level could have more children. I think that's where a part of this this lower testosterone thing. I know a lot of people say it's pesticides in the water, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying that your diet doesn't have something to do with it. It certainly does. But I know some people who drink Diet Coke and fucking, you know, don't eat that great, still have high testosterone. A lot of it is genetics. And a lot of times we don't like to attribute. We like to attribute to randomness what we could actually just attribute to genetics.
100%. So it's looking at external factors as the reason to why you didn't achieve it versus an internal factor, right? Something that you can control. So I've had a high performance coach. You work in high performance for probably about last year. Mm-hmm. And like going to the gym, getting my diet right is important. Training really hard is really right. And of course, my sleep is important, but it's kind of like one of the parts of the equation, right? It's like there's not one silver bullet, just like to my question about are men weaker. There's not one silver bullet. It's a combination of factors with a time delay. Now, let's shift gears into something element around like status and wealth, right? So you mentioned a Google engineer can make $500,000 a year and eat Cheetos and so on. But is there more of a shift you see towards an emphasis on men becoming, needing to be more wealthy and more status driven for dating and for evolution?
So the thing is, if you're asking me, is that what culture is asking men to do? The answer is no. If you're asking me, is that what women on dating apps want more of? The answer is probably yes. It seems that women are narrowing their attention to a small group of men at the top for their physical appearance or whatever resources they have. And those men get outrageous numbers of right swipes and matches and dates. And then there's the 80% of the men at the bottom, for those of you who don't understand, top 10% of men on dating apps get 63% of the right swipes. The top 20% of men get 83% of the right swipes. And the top 40% of men get 96% of the right swipes. That means 4% of men are yes. That means...
Is it hard to be in a 40% though, you know?
Yeah, that means the bottom 60% of men are getting 4% of the right swipes. The bottom 60%. Then it's just crazy to me. There's a one story where the guy, he right swiped 1 million times and went on 2 dates. And he wasn't that bad looking of a guy. He's just a normal, average looking dude. He's just one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Not strange. I mean, evolution makes sense. But what happens is both genders have this dilemma of choice, this perceived dilemma of choice. Women have a perceived dilemma of choice where they're exposed to a bunch of men on social media, dating apps, and maybe men who pay them on OnlyFans. And they consider these men to be like beneath them. I was like, oh, well, you know, obviously I could get any one of these men to commit to me. And where the women are correct is they perceive the men that they could get to have sex with them. And if you were to look at the accuracy of it, it's probably 100% accurate or close to 100%. If a woman's like, I can get all these guys to sleep with me, she's probably right. But if you say, can you get any of these guys to commit to you? She's going to think because she fucked a 10 that she can get a 9 to commit to her. And often, most of the time, that's not correct. And I see that happen with a lot of girls. Where they believe, now again, I'm not talking about like the top 1/100th of 1% of women. Those women are going to be able to get anyone they want, anytime they want. I'm just talking about in general, a lot of women, what'll happen is they'll get older, they'll turn 33, 34, and they're still really physically attractive. And then they'll try to get a guy to marry them that has been pursuing them for a long time. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, I'm cool for sex, but I'm not going to marry you. You know, I'm going to marry your 23-year-old cousin, your 23-year-old sister, who looks just like you, but I don't have the baggage and the body count to compete with and the trauma. So it's going to be easier for me. Does that come off as selfish? Sure. Do women complain about this? Yes. They use words like grooming and manipulation and love bombing and words like that. And sometimes that is what's going on, but most of the time it's not. Most of the time what's happening is men just prefer less stress when dealing with women who have gone through less. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Personally, it's not something I would actively choose. I am dating someone who's significantly younger than me, but she thought I was 10 years younger than I was. And I thought she was 4 or 5 years older than she turned out to be. It's not because she looks older. It's just because she had large fake breasts. So I just thought that she was, I didn't think she was 20 years old. I thought she was like 23, 24. And she also has muscles, which most girls that age don't have muscles. They're usually really, really skinny. Skinny fat, you know? And so, you know, we didn't realize it, but it's not something I've chosen for. This is by far the biggest age gap for me. But I mean, it's just one of these things where, you know, you learn over time. I forgot the original question. What was the subject?
No, it's more about the status and wealth, right? But I just, on second, I agree with a lot because of the fact. Go ahead.
Yeah. So let me say this again. As far as the status and wealth thing, do we need more status and wealth? The answer is like, I actually believe that it's never been easier to get in the top 20%. So remember, the bottom 80% of men are deemed unattractive. Top 20% of men are deemed attractive. Top 4.5% of men are so attractive that women will pursue them. That's just an analogy. There's short-term dating and long-term dating. And long-term dating, those numbers even out a little bit more. But there still is some men at the top who garner like outrageous amounts of attention from women. And the reality is, in order to get to that group, it's actually never been easier because the world is teaching you to not get into that group. Does that make sense? Like Disney and the church and places like that are teaching you, like they're starting to more and more describe to you that these tenets of masculinity, where if you adopt will easily make you more attractive, they're being told to not adopt those tenets and that those tenets are toxic and they're evil, et cetera. You can't have boundaries. How dare you tell a woman that you don't want her going to see male strippers, like stuff like this crazy shit like that. You know, your girlfriend is going out with a group of women who consistently cheat on their boyfriends. And you tell her, hey, I would prefer if you didn't do that. And then, to a lot of women out there, they're like, oh, you're being controlling. I'm like, not I'm being controlling. I'm trying to save our relationship. And she always has the right to leave. You know, there are certain things where you need to be, again, this is the way I look at, I think men and women should look at each other this way. It's okay to be discerning, but don't be judgmental. If a woman wants to fuck 500 guys, totally fine with that. Do whatever you want to do. I would love to have you on my podcast, but I don't want to marry you. Okay, that we can be discerning without being judgmental. And when we're discerning, we can make a lot better decisions. I still care for these people. I have female friends. My AVN's coming up in a couple of weeks. I have several friends of mine who've been working in the adult industry for a long time, and I'll go to their wedding and I'll go to their baby shower, and hopefully they'll probably come to my funeral because we're friends, but I'm not going to marry them. I'm not going to marry them because it doesn't seem like a good bet.
But people think that when you're instilling boundaries, it's a bad thing. But that's actually a good thing for the relationship. And even with my partner, so similar to you, my partner is a bit younger than me, not like a huge age gap, but I think it's about 5 years. And we just put some boundaries in place in a relationship. And it can be very basic, even like around the house, right? Like as in my office is also in my house. I have a shit ton of dogs in my house. It's loud. We have cleaners. We have cooks. We need to make sure that we have like a kind of functioning. And having those boundaries in place just means that it's running better. It's like a business, man. And I know you always relate dating back to business and dating back to fitness. You need to have like a system. It needs to be systematized, right? Otherwise, we're all pissing in the wind. And what will happen is over years, we're going to see that disgruntlement kick in, right? So looking at some of like the relationship data that you've pulled out, you're not even looking at divorce data, but some of relationship data, how do you see that kind of develop with, you know, relationships that are breaking up and then leading into divorce and so on?
You're talking about the high divorce rate that we see now in Europe and in North America? Yeah.
Any data you have on relationships.
Yeah. So just the data I have in relationships is, you know, about under the age of 30, about 2/3 of men and about 1/3 of women are single. So I mean, 2/3 of women are in relationships under the age of 30. These women are either sharing the same man or they're dating older men, which is more likely what they're doing. But a combination of those two things, because, you know, there's a bunch of men at the bottom who are just lower status and then just don't have the access. There's a group of men, I heard Mac and Murphy said this, a group of men, about 1/3 of men that will not be able to participate in the short-term dating market. They're just, you know, not attractive enough in the short-term dating market to participate, but they can participate in the long-term dating market, which sounds like a horrible, horrible, horrible fate to me. So you want me to wait?
Can you explain that difference for people?
Yeah. Short-term dating market is just like the hookup culture. It's like women who see men that they're really attracted to, and they would be willing to have sex with them without a promise of monogamy. A promise of commitment. The long-term dating culture is a situation where a woman is looking for a partner. And in doing so, men, if a man's willing to commit, the woman that he can get is actually higher status than like the short-term partner. So men, when it's really interesting, when men like say cheat in a relationship, they can cheat down. They don't always cheat down. I mean, if they have the opportunity to cheat up, they will, but they can cheat down. Meaning you'll see a man who's dating a woman who's a 10 and he'll cheat on her with a girl who's just not as attractive, but she's quick and easy and there's no commitment. And there's no consequences. A woman, on the other hand, they tend to cheat up. Meaning they want a guy who's even taller and better looking than their partner because their genetics, their hardwiring, their evolutionary psychology is telling them, hey, let's try to get these good genes in here, possibly cuckold your partner. You know, cuckoldry is not something that's really worthwhile today because of paternity tests. Although I've seen some municipalities make paternity tests illegal. I don't know if you've seen that. That is one of the most outrageous things I've ever seen. Basically, you cannot compel the woman to have a paternity test, but she can get you for child support. Outrageous. But it's stuff like that, that goes back to your original question. It's stuff like that goes back to your, well, I mean, you're in the UK. In the UK, if a woman says, I believe, I can't remember exactly what the rule is, but the husband has to pay for the wife's divorce attorney. Something to that effect has to happen.
Oh, dude. So in Ireland, so I'm originally from Ireland, and like, basically whatever way it looks at it is that if you're married and you have a kid, you're just fucked. Like I know guys when growing up, and the guy was like a multimillionaire, as in he had lots of successful businesses, and he was living in his like Alfa Romeo as a result. He was living in his car because they split. He lost like 99%. He lost all the divorce fees, everything. Now, we don't know why they split. Like you go to the course, the dad was a prick and so on, right? But to your point about this is like, we don't necessarily know the exact details, but all I do know is that the men usually get absolutely anally fucked a lot of times.
So I'm not saying that. So some people will go so far as to say women are encouraged to divorce. I'll say that they're not discouraged. Women hold divorce parties, divorce proceedings. When they have a child with a man, you can hear women like Brittany Renner talking about, you know, how to lock down a wealthy man and then have a baby with him so that you can get money out of it. They're not disincentivized. They're certainly not shamed for it. They're not shamed for taking a man's money and leaving. That's certainly the case. And so because of that, you're going to see a higher and higher divorce rate. And the other thing is, and a lot of guys get upset when I say this, women don't need men. Now, of course, ultimately they need men. They need men to provide the infrastructure for the world that they live in. But from a proximate standpoint, they don't. They can buy a Glock and you know, live in a nice, you know, high rise and make $300,000 a year. They don't, quote unquote, need a man. From a standpoint of the society, they need a man. But from individual standpoint, they don't need a man. And so because of that, they'll tolerate less and they'll think that they're settling more. And so there was one study, the author's name is Gottlieb, but I forgot the name of the book. But it was something where she surveyed a bunch of men and said, if you got a partner that was 80% of what you wanted, would you be happy with that? And the majority of men said, yes, I'd be very happy with a partner who was 80%. In fact, I agree with that. I would be one of those men saying, if I had a partner who was 80% of all of my desires, I'd be very happy. And they asked the women, would you be happy if you had a partner that was 80% of all your desires? And they said, no. The majority of women said, no, that's settling. So, and again, women are going to be more picky than men because women bear more of the parental workload. So I understand in any two gender species called parental investment hypothesis, that's what's going to happen. So that's normal. There's nothing weird about that. But the point is when you listen to statistics like that, and then you look at the stats where 80% of divorces are initiated by women, somewhere between 70 and 80%. And then you look at the stats where you have gay men and lesbian women. Gay men or lesbian women are divorcing at 2 to 3 times the rate that gay men are. So even when women don't have men to blame, they're still leaving relationships, which would indicate to me that there's possibly something inside of women's psychology that makes them more likely to become dissatisfied with a relationship with a man or with a woman and then want to leave that relationship. And when that proclivity is expressed without any consequences, you get a 56% divorce rate.
And it's almost like more of an emotion.
Yeah, when I say consequences, I don't mean consequences like women should not be captured or beaten or any. I'm not talking about that. When I mean consequences, like there's no stigma. There used to be a pretty significant stigma against divorce. There is no stigma against divorce. Being divorced, being on your second or third wife is just like, oh, it's just a, you look at somebody who's on their second wife and you're like, oh, that's a busy entrepreneur. That's a successful person. It's so crazy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's become so normal. There's no stigma against it. I'm not saying there should be a stigma. I'm just saying there used to be one. There isn't one now. And so I don't think women are incentivized to get divorced. I know some people will say they are. I think women are not de-incentivized to get divorced.
Do you think something like a prenup would prevent divorces?
So it's really great. I would recommend anyone who's considering getting married or considering the concept of a prenup to watch James Sexton's videos. He's a divorce attorney from New York, and he's dealt with some deals with guys who have lost hundreds of millions of dollars in divorce settlement. And he's got some really, really great information. He has got some great statistical information and some great anecdotal information from his experience as a divorce attorney. I would recommend you guys listen to him. One of the things he talks about was, what was the original question about the prenups? He says,
they reduce the divorce rate?
So there's this narrative in the red pill that prenups don't do anything and they're not upheld by judges or whatever. And the reality is, if you have things in the prenup that are unreasonable under the letter of the law, then yes, those things won't be upheld. But here's what people need to understand. You can prenup financial arrangements upon divorce. You can't prenup children. So I think that's the loophole that I think a lot of people are missing. It's like, well, I have a prenup, but I still had to pay a bunch of money. Yeah, that's because you had a child with this person. And you should take care of your children. You should. So that's where I think a lot of the confusion is. But the prenup in general, I do think having a prenup, it actually helps the relationship. Because what happens is both sides are now de-incentivized from leaving. In order for a relationship to work, there's always going to be moments in any relationship where one party or the other party might be like less satisfied than they normally would be in the relationship. But in order for the relationship to work, it's going to require work and sacrifice on both parts. And so that means sometimes when you want to leave, you don't leave because you're not incentivized to leave, because you're staying together because of your family, the church, and the kids. You decide to just tough it out and stay with this partner because in the end, your kids have a better life living with two parents as opposed to one. That's why some people don't get into a divorce, but that's a decision that you have to make, you know, person by person.
Yeah, again, I've seen that a lot. It's very big in Ireland because the problem with, you know, divorce in America is it's more common. So again, when you're on your second or third, it's quite common. But in Ireland, it's looked down on a lot of time.
Yeah.
So people will stay in marriages for 20, 30 years.
Also, and then when remained Catholic while the rest of the country turned Anglicans. Yeah.
But I will say that like religion is on like a massive decline in Ireland for the most part. People are still religious in their own home. But I mean, overtly like exercising like religious beliefs. Like I don't really think that many people walk down the street thinking of the Ten Commandments, to put it that way, right?
Yeah. I agree with you, but I'll bet you that if I were to survey the overall sentiment of the average Irish person, it's going to be much more politically conservative than it would be in California.
Oh, 100%. And that's the reason why I'm saying that. They will basically like suffer in silence until the kid is like 18, 20. And when the kid's fucked off to university, that's when they would split basically, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
yeah, of course.
There's like this weird balance in that. And like this is why it's multifactorial, right? This is why relationships are difficult. You mentioned there about like working together. It's the same in a contract with a business, right? If I'm working with someone in our business, our clients, sometimes they're happier, sometimes they're sadder, sometimes they're more fulfilled and less fulfilled. We need to be able to kind of toe that line. Now, I want to ask you about those different factors for men. So, you know, you mentioned that some guys just don't have it. They don't have the it factor. Some guys aren't tall. Some guys aren't shredded, so on. So for me, right, I'm a small dude. On the best days, I get up to like 5'7". But as a result, I deliberately got myself in shape. I played rugby when I was younger, got in really good shape, went into bodybuilding, run, take care of myself and so on. So I feel like that there is stuff that you can do if you're not this like genetic freak, right? Mm-hmm. How do you think about that with guys that you work with, like in terms of people that basically cope by saying that they're not tall or smart or intelligent or have good hairlines?
So let's go through all of the attraction triggers. So the first thing I'm going to tell you is learn attraction triggers and then adopt those attraction triggers regardless of how you feel about it. Okay. Now, obviously some attraction triggers, I'd stay away from those that are deal with deceit or drugs or something like that. But for the most part, you know, we have physical attractiveness. Can you make yourself taller? Probably not. But what you can do is if you're missing, you know, if you're bad hairline, hair plugs or minoxidil, there's hair transplants. Also, getting a beard that's shaped correctly to accentuate your jawline. I highly recommend guys get a ball fade instead of the bushiness on the side because it accentuates your jawline. Having a shoulder to waist ratio that's wider. How do you do that? You work on delts, upper body muscle, and then you also lose as much fat as you can around your waist. Get like below 14% body fat. And then, additionally, the way you dress. Do you dress in a way that is complementary to your body? The fit is way more important than the brand name. Do you wear maybe a suit jacket? Maybe you're a person like me who has narrow shoulders. You would wear a suit jacket that would make your shoulders seem broader and your waist seem smaller, so you'd have that V shape to you. Do you brush your teeth and your tongue? Do you have bad teeth? If you do, would you be willing to get veneers? I don't care if veneers are $20,000. They're fucking worth it for some people. Definitely. Absolutely. Does your breath smell bad? Do you groom the rest of your face? Do you, you know, get your eyebrows waxed, or do you have a unibrow? Like, do you wash your face on a regular basis? And then, so that's just looks. Then we can leave looks and we go to charisma, humor, social networks, access. I know a couple of guys that like, they basically just, they're like real estate agents and they have access to these mansions and throw parties at these mansions and just bang a bunch of girls from that. Guys who have access to a yacht. Maybe he works at a yacht rental agency or whatever, and he's got a free yacht on a Wednesday, and he just takes a bunch of girls on the yacht with him. I know one guy, he puts artist wristbands onto girls on stage at a nightclub in Vegas, and he just ends up sleeping with a bunch of girls. So access to resources is another way. Attraction trigger. The one that I teach the most in my program is called pre-selection, which is the concept was when women see other women around you, they're more interested in you. So the way I do that is by telling men to, you know, basically when you see women, put them in the friend zone, get as many women in the friend zone as you can, and then start going out with like large groups of women. And then those women will introduce you to other women. They'll make you more calibrated and they'll give you access to any place you want to go to. So that's what I found as far as attraction triggers. And those definitely can overcome if somebody is not that attractive in the face or short or whatever. Those things can be overcome with those other attraction triggers. David Buss and Sidney Messon write a book called Why Women Have Sex. They go over 237 reasons why women have sex with men. And not all of them were attraction reasons, but it shows that there's a variety of reasons why women have sex with men. Whereas for men, it's not quite the same thing. If you did a book called Why Men Have Sex, it would be like a pamphlet. There are very few reasons why men have sex in comparison to women. So there's women have sex for more reasons, and women have more attraction triggers than men do.
You know, what's interesting there, right, is the fact that a lot of men will think that it's to do with like money and wealth, right, and status. Well, money and wealth.
But money, wealth, and status, because they are effective attraction triggers. The problem is a lot of times, and again, men suffer from autism at a higher rate than women do. One of the issues with autism and also with OCD thinking is this black and white splitting that happens. So it's because a guy who has money fucked a hot girl, therefore all hot girls want money. Does that make sense? You see how that's very black and white? When in reality, the world is nuanced. You can make a girl laugh into falling in love with you. You can. You absolutely can do it. Even if you're
and
not
the best guys do that sometimes, right? Yes. And you could be broke, right? You'll often see guys that are like,
yes.
I'll give you an example. Like, so live in Bali, a lot of surfers here, right? A lot of guys are like 6'3" surfers. Yeah. Surfers are broke, right? You open up their wallet. It's like a favorite. It's like a famous meme of someone opens up their wallet and there's like nothing in it. It's like the surfer, right? And they don't talk about, you know, putting that woman on a yacht, or they don't talk about building them a mansion, but they probably have other characteristics that make them more like flowy, more relaxed, more easygoing, so on. And they attract a lot of incredibly high status women, good looking women as a result.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, and this is where it gets interesting, because I think a lot of guys will fuck it up, right? Because they'll focus so much on one variable, which is like, let's say, Instagram game, and then forget about all the other stuff or think that the other stuff isn't important. But you need to have, I guess, like that holistic approach, which is basically what you teach,
again,
right?
Again,
is that
you,
it's not
play,
just about one vertical.
You play FIFA? You ever play FIFA? The video
when
game?
I was a kid,
you know,
yeah.
FIFA? Okay, so you know how FIFA, they have attributes, speed, acceleration, change of direction, all this kind of stuff.
I compared to Grand Theft Auto. You know, Grand Theft Auto,
exactly,
the same sex appeal.
Those are called attributes. So you just do the same thing. It's like comedy, charisma, social networks, access, height, muscularity, facial structure, hair, grooming, pre-selection. These are all attributes. You want to get them all up to 80, and you want to get a few of them up to 99. Just like you would for any EA sports franchise. I play Madden. It's the same kind of thing. So it's like, it's, you know, you want to get those attributes up. You don't want any back. Again, let's just say you have a running back in Madden and he is like really fast, but he fumbles the ball all the time. That means one of his attributes is bad. This would be the equivalent of a 6'3" Australian male stripper who has terrible breath. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
You need all the attributes at least up to an 80.
Mm. I'd love to walk through even just like a small bit on like, social media first, right? So taking a deep dive into that, where do you see a lot of dudes like get fucked up with like Instagram? Is it like how they curtail their Instagram? Is it how they're reaching out to chicks? Like, how does that work?
Where I see guys screw up is when they start making the Instagram for themselves instead of making the Instagram for other people. Facebook is where you take those photos of you in high school. Instagram is where you show status. You're selling a product. You're selling yourself. You're building a brand. That is what Instagram is for men. It is. If you don't understand that, then go find a different platform. Instagram is to show perceived status. That is what it is for. That is its primary mission. It's not there to write poems. You're not there in order to, you're there to make people laugh, to inform them, and to create some controversy and get, create engagement. That's what you're there for. And then as a man, like from a dating aspect, you're there to show status. So when men do this and they show, like, I see guys who are not that good of shape and they take these close up pictures of themselves with no shirt on. And I'm like, bro, you are really hurting yourself because you're not in that good of shape. Number one. And number two, you're the dude who takes his shirt off for his fucking Instagram. You see what I'm saying? Now, if you're really in good, great shape, but it's a picture of you with no shirt on surfing, you're doing a thing with a huge wave behind you, two thumbs up. That's a great way to do it. Because you're showing, for women, when they, when they're on social media, the subject, the thing people want to see is the woman, right? The woman is the subject. The woman is the thing we want to see. For men, it's not this, we're not the subject. It's what we can accomplish or what's around us. That's what the subject is. Does that make sense? So it's like, it's the man in front of the Eiffel Tower, or the man, you know, in the Grand Canyon, or the man flying an airplane, or the man surfing, or the man firing a firearm, or the man driving a super fast car. It's what you can produce and how you can perform. That's how men should be putting forth their social media. So your social media should always show access to scarce resources, higher status, and higher sexual selection. That's what you want. Pre-selection, that's what you want to show on your social media.
So how do you integrate that with, or how do you separate that with, let's say, like Instagram for business? So like trying to make money, trying to have, sell your products, trying to sell your services, but also trying to show that high status as an individual for chicks, basically.
Okay, so this is funny, right? This is such a great conversation to have. If some businesses are what are I consider sexy businesses, and some businesses are not. So the ultimate, like the guys who just crush, professional athletes, musical artists, movie stars. And here's another one. A lot of people don't realize plastic surgeons get so many women on social media. It's fucking crazy. You get to date a guy who's rich and can give you free plastic surgery, and he's competent, and plastic surgeons, you generally have a huge social media follow, huge, like a couple hundred thousand followers on Instagram. Those plastic surgeons crush it. Okay. If you have a sexy job, you run a Lamborghini rent, a luxury car rental agency. And every week you're showing off a new car to rent, and it's you just like doing donuts in a fucking, in a Lamborghini. That's a situation where your job also is attractive to women. You see that? That's called a sexy job. I have a job where I do, you know, lifestyle stuff. So I host events and I host bikini competitions and I'm on red carpets. So my job is also attractive to some people.
You can also make it attractive, right? So just on your point there a second. So like, yes. I'm basically a podcast host, right? And we also run a media company. I can make that alluring and interesting, yes. Even though in the back end, the fulfillment is fucking boring as fuck.
That was my second part, is if you have a job that's not sexy. So if you're an accountant or a lawyer, what you would do is go on TikTok and you would find accountants or lawyers that make funny videos that have gone viral, and you would copy those videos. Does that make sense? That concept. So for instance, you know what you could do as a TikToker, or I'm sorry, as a podcaster to help your engagement and actually be more attractive to the opposite sex, that would show you being higher status, make reaction videos. Because when you make reaction videos, like, so it's, you're up on the top and then the reaction, what you're reacting to is on the bottom of the video. When you do so, it makes you look like an authority figure. It makes you look higher status. That's why you'll see in those reaction videos, the person reacting is at the top of the video. So it's a really great, I mean, it's just one of many ways that you can do this, but you can take something that's not sexy and make it sexy. And I'll tell you something else. And man, a lot of guys won't believe this, but it's absolutely true. If I am a forensic accountant and I work for the federal government and I make these videos on TikTok where I talk about forensic accounting that I use in order to solve crimes or whatever, and I have 500,000 followers on TikTok, if I go up to a girl who's like 25 years old and super hot, and she sees that I have 500,000 followers on TikTok, it doesn't make any difference that it's about forensic accounting. She is 100x more likely to go out with me. And I know that's a horrible statement on society. I know it's a horrible statement on society. I know I'm not telling you that it's moral. I'm not telling you that it's right, but I am telling you that it's true, because that's the way it works. If you had a podcast right now that had 5 million subs, a YouTube channel with 5 million subs, and you had a podcast, and on your podcast, all you did was talk about feminism is garbage, women are trash, don't believe all women. All you did was trash women for several hours on that show. Because you have 5 million subs, you would have a line down the street of women trying to get on your show. Because status is status is status.
I've even seen that. So like, we have like an online business podcast for like young guys that are starting, right? like, so my show is at like 60k subs. And I even noticed that when I was young, no one, when I was small, no one gives a shit and no one even wants to be associated with you. But then association by numbers, as time goes on, people just want to be around that individual who's like a podcaster, basically, right?
Yeah.
Because they see someone that has been successful in one domain, and therefore it's a social cues, right? It's just validation through society, basically. And that happened back in the day too, right? When you, if you went to see a musician, right? So a chick goes to see a musician, doesn't have a clue about rock music, but you walk into one room and it's full of people. You walk in another room and it's empty. The one that's full of people, true association, they're going to think is better and it's going to want to, you know, be around that individual, not set aside sleeping with them and so on. But that's basically just like how society fucking works, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely important to understand that concept of understanding, you know, how society works and how status works. One of the things you're going to find is that when you focus as a man, focus more on yourself and improving yourself, and focus less on like the blatant chasing of women. When women see that you're not that interested in chasing them anymore, all of a sudden you become outrageously attractive to them. When it's like you do this thing again, but here's the thing: what you're saying before, what you were saying, the way we describe what you just said in that previous sentence was competency. You're showing competency in something. Remember, it was the women during our ancestral period would sleep with the competent man, the builder or the hunter or the warrior. They would sleep with that man, the man with the broad shoulders who could conduct the most violence on her behalf to protect her and her child. She would choose the competent man. Now, during those ancestral times, the violent man and the competent man were often one and the same. Today, that's not the case. Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk are not the violent man anymore, but they are the competent man. And so it's just one of these crazy things where women, dude, one of my favorite things is Future, right? The rapper Future. Future says so many derogatory things towards women and is so outrageously attractive to women. Just consider that. She belonged to the streets. It's sensational. I'll take her on the weekend. I'll give her back to you by Monday. Like, he just says these things about women that like women should be offended by. And yet they find him outrageously attractive. See what I'm saying?
Fuck, man. Of course, man. It's just,
I got
because,
my baby
like,
mama and again, my side bitch kissing, like that dude. But women just go nuts for Future. Why is that? Because he has status.
Bringing it back to business, bringing it back to anything. If you were to jam your course down people's throats all the time, they're not going to buy, right? But when you pay, lay that kind of push and pull, or like for us, if we chase prospects and keep messaging them every single day, they're not going to work with us. However, if we capped our numbers, which we do, we only take on 10 clients at a time, and they message me saying, I want to come back in a month. I'm like, hey, dude, we don't have space in a month, right?
Yeah. That's
what I'm saying. We might have space in a month.
What I do is, so it's a similar kind of situation. I'll have a client and he'll get stood up by a girl. And what we'll do is like, okay, you're going to throw an event and you're going to show that everything at the event was fucking awesome. Here's how you're going to take the video. You're going to make these highlights. You're going to put this on your grid. You're going to put this on your story. And you're basically just going to dunk on this girl who stood you up. And it works so incredibly well. And the girl even knows you're doing it. This is Bismarck, FedEx Fearless. Me and him disagree on this one point. He talks about, he talks about being never, like when a girl stands you up, like don't ever post pictures of you out having fun with other people. I disagree with that. I think you can be petty and girls absolutely know you're being petty, but it doesn't matter because the effect is subconscious and it still works even though you're petty.
Can you explain that in more detail as to like why that triggers individuals?
Yeah, I mean, because one of the things is you notice how you have an aversion to like the smell of sulfur. You smell it. You can't make yourself like the smell of sulfur. There's certain things you have an aversion to. I can't make myself be attracted to a woman I'm not attracted to, or be not attracted to a woman I am attracted to. Does that make sense? I can't make myself be that way. I can't make myself like one color more than the other. These preferences are just sort of baked in, right? So one of the preferences that women have is that like their hypergamy algorithm is going to say, I find this guy more attractive. I'm sifting between the alphas and the betas. I think that these men are alphas and these men over here are betas. And when in doing so, the calculations are happening so fast in their mind and their subconscious that when you trigger their subconscious, it's incredibly powerful. And even though they know you're doing it to them, it's women do this all the time. I'm never going back to my ex. He's a fuck boy. But you know she's complaining about him because he evokes some emotions in her. And then what does she always do? She always goes back. She usually goes back to him, usually has sex with him. He has no intention of committing. you know, whatever. And then, you know, she hates him later. It's one of these situations where even though she knows cognitively that something's being done to her, her emotions are so strong that it pushes through. So for me, I have my clients have a folder on their phone called Fire. And in their Fire folder, basically anytime they get stood up, they just post stories of them in Jamaica with 50 girls on stage at you know, fucking Electric Daisy Carnival, hanging out with a celebrity. I tell them just post Fire and then just completely watch as the girl who stood them up watches the videos and then just do not respond to her whatsoever. That's what I would do. Women, listen, let me tell you something. This, the guys, women, when they think that they're the best you can do, they will stand you up. When a woman knows you that you can do better than her, she's far less likely to stand you up.
100%, man. And again, it comes back to demand, right? Supply and demand. Now, I got to ask you on this about like, so you put a lot of emphasis on this. You get your clients put a lot of emphasis on this, and there can be software engineers, accountants, so on. Can dating be like a distraction for men at some point?
Yeah, of course. Anything can. So just think of health, wealth, and relationships. Just think of that triangle. Whichever one is the lowest is the one you should probably work on because you want all three of them to work. If you've got relationships and your wealth down, you're the fat old guy that you have to pay women for sex. But if you're the super healthy guy and you have your relationships down, then you're the broke, really good looking guy who sleeps on people's couches. You don't want to be that person. You want to have all three of them going. So can dating become a distraction? It can become a distraction if health and wealth are not solved. Yes. It can also become a distraction if you're getting bad advice. So I had a client yesterday telling me he confessed to a girl that he was interested in her. And I'm like, you never do. All you guys, listen to me. You will never confess to a girl that you like her until she shows you compliance. A woman has to earn your affection. Let me say it again. A woman has to earn your intent and interest, attraction and affection. Let me say it for a third time. A woman has to earn your attention, your attraction, your intent, your affection. She has to earn it. If you give it to her because she has big boobies and a big butt, then you are a low value man. You are worthless and your attention to her is worthless. She will laugh at you behind your back. She will make you pay for dinner and she will go fuck her toxic ex because you did not understand the concept that you need to make a woman earn your attraction, attention, affection. She needs to earn it and she earns it through compliance. She does not earn it through giving you attention back. Does that make sense? When you grasp that concept, remember we talk about boundaries. When you grasp that concept, then you understand the boundaries that you need to have. For me, one of the boundaries is I'm not single now. I'm in a relationship. But if I was single, one of the boundaries is a woman is not going to get compliance from me until she gives me compliance. And a woman is not going to get attention from me for her physical attractiveness unless she gives me compliance. She's just not going to get those things. I don't give my attention away for free. My attention is valuable because in comparison, all the other men she encounters give their attention away for free because she has big boobies. Okay, that's it. And when you do so, you are a valueless man.
So talk to me about the compliance because like a lot of the fucking, you know, boss babes will throw their hands up and say like, oh, like that's like ownership and all this stuff. So explain what you mean
obedience.
By compliance.
Yeah. So ownership and obedience are not what I'm talking about. Compliance is this. Hey, babe, how was your day today? I don't fucking know. That's non-compliance. What I'm asking for is for you to just like play along with the things we're doing. When I say compliance, I mean play along with the relationship. Go 100%. With the flow. When I say compliance, I lean the literal definition of compliance. Go with the flow. Enjoy the relationship. When we have discussions, ask me questions. Don't accuse me of things, right? That's what I mean by compliance. And then when I say, hey, honey, you remember last night when we went to watch that movie I didn't want to watch, but you wanted to watch and I watched it with you? Tonight, what I'd like for you to do is join me in the social interaction, meet some of my friends, meet some of my coworkers, even though I know you don't like these social interactions. Comply with what I ask for. That's what I mean by compliance. I don't mean obedience and I don't mean ownership. I mean compliance. When I take a photo with a bunch of my female friends, do they look excited to be near me? Do they have a smile on their face? Are their torsos turned in towards me? Do they look like they're excited to be there? If they do, that is compliance. It's not obedience. It's not sexual submissiveness. It's just compliance. Compliance is just compliance. It's just a little bit, just a sprinkle. You don't want women all over you in photos. What you want is a girl who's just like kind of maybe an arm around you and she just have big old smile on her face. Maybe her head on your shoulder. That's it. Nothing. And you're not even touching her. You don't even put your hand around her waist. That's what you want, like a photo like that. It just looks so good. Women find that so attractive that other women choose you. Because consider what a woman, like as a man, we have pretty perfect information when it comes to choosing a woman, especially for short term. We see a woman, she's hot, and we just go, 1, 2, 3, hot. In fact, it doesn't even take 3 seconds. We can tell a woman's hot in like 0.2 seconds. She's hot. Like, that's it. We have all the information we need. Now, she may have a disease. She may have a crazy boyfriend. There might be some serious problems with her, but that's like the 15% we don't know. But the 85% we do know, we have pretty perfect information. 1, 2, 3, hot. That's all we need to know. For women, they have such imperfect information when it comes to choosing a man. Is he going to be bad in bed? Is he going to be physically abusive? Is he going to lie to me? Is he pretending to be rich and he's actually broke? There's so many things that she doesn't know. Is he going to become obsessed with me if I give him any attention? So one of the ways for her to be able to tell with very little risk and work whether or not a man meets her standards is, do other women choose him? Because if other women are consistently choosing him, then that probably means he's probably a great person to go out with. And so women are more likely to be around those people. Women are more likely to choose those men.
I love that, man, because for guys, like, it's so simple in many ways, right? It's like less complicated. Over time, we see that effect, right? In terms of like, are they due to have a crazy ex, due to have some crazy obsessions? But for the most part, it's a very simple equation, whereas for women, it's completely different. Now, you mentioned something there earlier about like the boss babe and the boss babe like perspective. How do you think like the kind of rise of boss babes and how it's gotten crazy? Like, as I mentioned, I was in the US. I used to saw them like everywhere in New York, right? And it was like very intense, very career focused. How do you think that has affected, let's say, relationships and how that affects even like marriages?
So the thing is, it's okay for women to want to be independent. I get that. I don't have an issue with that.
Of course.
And I don't have an issue with the fact 60% of college enrollment is women and women are making more money. That is not the issue. The issue is when women are now making it a mantra, a motto, almost a rallying cry that I don't need no man. That's where we get into an issue. It's like men are worthless. Well, you know, we made things a little bit more equal. So if men and women are making the same amount of pay, but you want a man who makes more money than you, then you're choosing from a smaller and smaller group of men. And then you complain when those men have a plethora of women to choose from and they don't choose you. And so that's essentially, you know, where we've ended up with. As far as, I don't want to be so specific when I say boss babe, but like women don't, again, from an ultimate cause, women do need men because they need men to provide the infrastructure. From a proximate cause, women do not need men because they can buy a Glock and make $300,000 a year. So, you know, they can just hire, they can get Postmates and hire a handyman. They don't need a man, quote unquote. So because of that, that's where as we get further and further away from a survival scenario, then we get further and further away from defined gender roles, which is good and bad. You know, some people say it's mostly bad. Some people say it's mostly good. But we get further and further away from defined gender roles. The real question is, it's not, is the boss babe thing good or bad? The thing is, what's it going to do to the overall happiness of individuals? Well, we see a lot of men that have just been left behind. They're not very happy. Okay. We see a few men at the top that are getting tons of attention from women. Those dudes are doing pretty good. I have a feeling, just a guess here. Those guys are doing pretty good up there at the top. And then the last group are the women who are saying it's better to be childless and single in my 40s. And those are some of the happiest women in the world. This is really funny. When you read these studies that say women over the age of 40 who are childless are incredibly happy or whatever. And then you read other studies that show that women under the age of 40 who are childless and single are the highest abusers of fucking Prozac, Zoloft, and other like antidepressants. It's like, yeah, of course they're happy. They're taking antidepressants. That's why they're happy. This idea that somehow humans are happier without children, how does that make sense? Just consider evolution for 2 seconds. How does it make sense for the, and again, obviously there's going to be individual exceptions, but as in general, as a population, how does it make sense for us to not want to have kids? How could evolution possibly reward us? Like the reward center in our brain, the dopamine, the serotonin. How could our brains possibly reward us for not wanting to pass on our genetics? How does that make sense to anyone? Again, this is where
it's comfort, evolutionary right? psychology. But it's comfort. Like they want comfort of not having children. They want to be able to just the like live their life.
They don't want the inconvenience of children. I understand what you're saying. My point is, I think it's something they talk themselves into. And then you'll see these women, you hear like, what's the girl who was on Friends? What's her name?
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston. You remember she said she wished that she had froze her eggs. She's 50 and now she wants kids. It's one of these things where it's like her career came first and now she wants kids. for if Jennifer Aniston was a man in his 50s, he could still have kids, no problem whatsoever. Now, because Jennifer Aniston is a female, it's going to be harder and harder for her to take a child to term over the age of 40. And a lot of women don't understand this biological truth. No matter how mean it is, it's still true.
Of course, right? And Richard Cooper always alludes to that. It's like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true. I always learn that from Richard, right? Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true.
You take two fraternal twins. One of them's male, one of them's female. They both came from the same womb, born in the same day. You have those... Or is it fraternal or maternal? I forgot which one's identical. The monozygotic, not the monozygotic twins, the other type. You have the two, they're born on the same day. They come out and one's a man and one's a woman. At the age of 25, they can both have children. At the age of 35, they can both have children, but the man is far more likely to be able to. And at the age of 45, the woman probably can't have children. It's going to be pretty hard. The man absolutely can still have children. At the age of 55, the man can still have children and the woman's gone through menopause. The woman's reproductive career, controlling for everything else, controlling for genetics, a woman's reproductive career is shorter than a man's. And that is just a biological truth. No matter how much you don't like it, it doesn't mean it's not true. And so because of that, as women wait longer, then there's a cost to pay. I'm not saying things are good or bad. What I am saying is there's a cause and effect for everything that you do.
100%. Of course, man. And it's a time delay again, right? If you make those decisions in your 30, you don't want to. Maybe in your 40, you don't have the decision anymore. That's the problem, right? You just have removed it from yourself.
Here's the balance. As a man, I have a way longer time to choose to have kids and start a family, okay? But as a woman, you get way more attention from the opposite sex throughout your entire life than I do. And way, way more when you're younger. So this is the trade-off that we have. Just because we're both 40 now, it's unfair because things have... when we were both 23... things were heavily shaded in the woman's balance. Now that we're 45, things are heavily shaded in the man's. Sorry, it's just the way it was. I had to earn my $1 million and you were gifted one, and that's the difference.
Of course, man. And also the guy's returns are asymmetrical, right? If you put in the work, so you're in your 40s, it's fucking crazy, right? You look so young, man. I'm 27. The asymmetrical returns of building a business in your 20s and learning the skills kick in when you're 30 and they kick in when you're 40. Right,
they just get the guys right now.
They get ridiculous basically as a result. So it
the advantage that you guys have now compared to when I was growing up is outrageous. It's just incredible. Like the opportunities that you guys have in order to make money when you're in your 20s now is outrageous compared to what I was doing when I was in my 20s.
And also, you have to capitalize on it, right? Because of recording with people like you and Rich and Sterling and Justin. I've got my finger out of my ass, basically, and been like, I call it the deciding decade, right? Putting the work in my 20s because it's the opportunity, right? And this opportunity will close to some degree.
Yeah.
But it's about capitalizing on that opportunity. And this is the biggest fucking thing, right? I had Chris Williamson's manager on my show. His name's called Sean Hanif. One of his products. And he said something so interesting. He was like, everyone believes, especially men, that they're going to become wealthy. They just believe it's going to happen. It will just happen over time. But you need to literally do the fucking work. And thankfully, for a lot of guys, or for some guys, they will do that work and they will get the returns in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s. And that's just it's an aspect of just work, right? Doing the work, making actions, building the right businesses. And man, you were coming out of the military, right? Was that in your 20s or 30s?
I was 33 when I got out.
Yeah. So like basically, if you think about that, right? People think that are 25, their life is over. They think that they haven't achieved the goals they want to do. Yeah,
I have clients who are 32 and they're like, I can't believe I saw a girl who's 25 and my sister told me I'm too old to date a girl who's 25 and I'm 32. I'm too old to date these women. I need to just give up. And I'm like, dude, you're 30 fucking two. I'm 46. When I met my girlfriend, she was 20. Bro, I didn't give a shit. My life's over. I'm 25 and I'm not a millionaire. Wah. Look, dude, it is crazy. Crazy listening to this shit. Yeah, I hear it all the time. And what's the reason for it, right? It's the kid who's 22 who became a millionaire trading Bitcoin. It's the kid who's a streamer on Twitch making $1 million a year, and it's the guy who's like the Instagram influencer. Like, because they're young making all this money, then you think you should be doing the same thing. And it's the FOMO and the jealousy. You know, maybe one of these guys stole your girl. You know what I'm saying? And it just pisses you off. The rich guy stole your girl. It's the thing for me, as you know, I've said this before. My necessity to get validation from the opposite sex growing up, not so much now, but when I was growing up, that necessity to get validation from the opposite sex made me go to the gym. It made me become more social. It made me read more books. It made me get in better shape. It made me have a better diet. It made me more considerate of other people. It made me, like I said, it granted more social alignments, went on more adventures, and traveled more. I think, in general, my necessity to get validation from the opposite sex made me a better person. Women, their validation doesn't come from sex. It comes from attention. And I'm not sure that women's necessity for attention makes them better people. I don't think it does. Now, granted, men's validation for sex can make them worse people too. Addiction to pornography, sexual assault, you know, violence, stuff like that, overt levels of jealousy. But most of society is built, the foundation and the infrastructure of society is built because men were trying to impress women. The vast majority of it was because women were more selective than men. So because they were trying to impress all these women, that's why we have spaceships and skyscrapers. That's where those things came from. Electric cars, et cetera, high-speed internet. It's because men were developing these technologies in order to provide for families or to gain higher status or higher sexual selection. I'm not certain that women's necessity, because women don't have the same, they don't get the same validation from sex. Sex is a bonding thing for them. It's very important to them, but it's not a validation. Most women, I do know some that are like this, but most women don't have like a notch count or like brag to their friends about the 50 guys they fucked or whatever. Most girls aren't like that. There are some, there's a few Britney Renners out there, but most girls aren't like that. And so because of that, because they get their validation from attention in general, I don't know that their validation for attention makes them a better person. Could make them a worse person. Just a theory.
Interesting point, man. Interesting point. And also men will look to get the validation from achievement, right? You build a business or you'll work on becoming an athlete or so on, and you'll get that. You'll basically focus in on that. Now, before we finish up, there's probably two main areas. If we get to one, I'll be happy with that, is looking at, so you're like high status friends and network you've built on the male side, right? So male to male. Now, I just got was able to do it through my podcast. I wouldn't say I'm like friends with my guests. I hate those people, but I would say I've met them and, you know, we were on a talking basis, maybe a WhatsApp basis at best. How have you been able to use your content even to network? Because, you've met Ty Lopez, you've had, who the fuck, you've had some crazy guys on your show over the last couple of years. It's been amazing.
I had a lot of these friends before I started the podcast. I started the podcast just because I knew so many cool people and I was really good at doing interviews. I've been doing them on red carpets for years. So I decided, hey man, what if I just sit down and do a podcast? It would be like if Ryan Seacrest did a podcast. It was like that. You know, he did all the red carpet interviews and tried to turn it over to do like regular, one-on-one interviews. My podcast is definitely a combination of Lex Friedman, Andrew Huberman, and Joe Rogan. Like that's where, the initial idea for it, a sit down cordial conversation where I do some research on my guests and try to pull out answers that nobody else had pulled out before. And it was between 2 and 3 hours long. Those were the things that I copied. Very short intro, very short outro. Don't introduce myself at the beginning of every episode. Like I just, one of these things where I just try to copy what those guys were doing. And so as far as the networking, man, you have an excuse to talk to anyone. We hired a guy recently. We have a new guy who works for us, who his job is to get me on as many podcasts as possible. And one of the things he does, he's like, you willing to go on this podcast, et cetera, whatever. But the thing is afterwards, now I can get those people on my show and it gives me more exposure. And I use it in order to meet people that I've always wanted to network with. And I have a very easy time making friends because I have a very clear understanding of how friendship structure works between high status men, which is high status men are useful to one another. They're useful. 100%. It doesn't mean that the relationship is only transactional. But what it means is like I only have, let's say, 10 slots for guy friends. Those 10 slots need to be filled up with guys who can help me with my sales team, help me with my workout regimen, help me with my diet, help, like, et cetera. Does that make sense? High status friends that I have now, like those spots, those 10 men spots, male spots that I have for guy friends are now only filled up with guys who can help me and whom I can help. So what I found is that productive men who are high status have friends who are productive. That's just something that I've noticed. Super shallow. 100%. I know a lot of people think that's super gross. Don't really care. The people at the top, that's just how they function.
And dude, the way I look at this is the Hormozy approach. I was on a podcast yesterday and they asked me, how do I pick friends? And it's, they talk good shit around behind your back and they push you towards the goal. Right. So my goal is to grow my podcast, grow my business. There are guys that are in that space and they also in the fitness and health space. They push you towards that goal and you'll find it very fucking hard to find someone who gets into one category, if not both. Because some people are envious and jealous, right? And that will kind of diffuse the relationship. I find that quite interesting sometimes. When you're coming up with someone, if you might break away, it might diffuse the relationship. So that makes it harder to find people who are on a similar mission to you that actually elevate you.
Agreed.
Good point, man. Last thing I want to ask you is about OnlyFans. So if you were to look, like, take a step back and look at OnlyFans now, how do you like think about like the impact of that? Because like, you know, even the people that you meet, the women you meet might have OnlyFans. What's it going to impact, you think?
So it's a weird impact. So there's several different, I was in a documentary, we filmed it yesterday, and they asked me the exact same question. And the thing is, there's so many levels to this. There's individual women right now who are in relationships and they're getting offers to go have sex with couples or go have sex with male influencers that have millions of followers on OnlyFans. And these women are succumbing to it and going, I know one girl, she got divorced, started an OnlyFans, and then got asked by a couple to go have sex with them. And so she does it. She never poses nude. Her first thing on OnlyFans is her having sex with some other dude. It was crazy. And she probably made 80 grand from it. And it's like, so a lot of people, that's life-changing amounts of money. So from a standpoint of like dating, I also know another girl, she's been on my podcast a couple of times, and she says, whenever she picks a guy that she wants to date, one of the first considerations that she has is, will he fuck me on camera? Is he comfortable having sex with me on camera, filling out that release and doing it? And by the way, his name and driver's license is going to be on file at OnlyFans headquarters from that point forward, because he has to sign a release in order for it to happen. And now, another thing is, the women are on OnlyFans. Let's just say you're with your husband and you film like hot guy girl porn together, and then for whatever reason you guys break up. Now you have a new partner. Do you take those old videos down? Yes or no? Most of the girls I know absolutely say no. They're going to keep those videos up. So now you're dating a woman who is selling pornography of her fucking other men while she's dating you. You go back home for Christmas. You introduce her to the family. They go check. They click the little link in bio. And now your mom is watching her give another guy a blowjob. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, these are some of the conundrums 100%. I see from women on OnlyFans. I have another one. This woman, poor lady. And I like her a lot. Her husband died and she filmed with her husband all the time. She was making so much money from filming with her husband that she barely had time to go to the funeral before she had to find another guy to film with on her OnlyFans, like that kind of stuff. So that's from the OnlyFans content creator standpoint. Except from the outside standpoint, what does it do? It de-incentivizes hard work and kind of incentivizes women to sexualize themselves with, in general, I don't think is good. And number two, it promotes pornography for men, which I think a lot of times is an excessive sedation. It's a huge dopamine hit that causes men to like have a sort of a distorted view of relationships and a distorted view of women. It causes men who are 18 years old to have erectile dysfunction from excessive amounts of pornography. It's just and OnlyFans is just an extension of pornography. Now, granted, some OnlyFans are women in bikinis, like my friend Kindly and CJ, like they're just mostly in bikinis. Caitlin Runk and Kylie Myers, they never take nudes on there. They don't fuck themselves on camera, nothing like that. And they make a lot of money doing that. That is not what I'm talking about. Those girls have relationships and they don't need to like pick a partner to fuck on camera. But what it's done in general, there's another thing that's happened, is that there's a subset of men who are writing these women back and forth on OnlyFans and on Telegram. There's these Telegram groups where this happens as well. And they're writing back and they're paying for these comments back and forth, and they're actually writing back with a Filipino man, a man in Jakarta, Indonesia.
Of course,
you know, these accounts.
Of course,
which, by the way, to me, that kind of constitutes fraud, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a class action lawsuit against stuff like that. So
that's the OnlyFans management section.
Yeah, I could see something like that happening. I mean, I would be worried if I was a woman and I'm sitting there and I have. You know, 250,000 subs on my OnlyFans, but apparently I answered all of their messages. Like, how am I going to prove that to a judge? You know, ma'am, you 100%. Answered 250,000 messages in 3 days. Is that what you did, ma'am? You know, I'm supposed to believe that? Here's a picture of you at the pool drinking on that same day, ma'am.
The reason why I have an issue with that is just because, like, I know a lot of the OnlyFans management agency, like, owners. I know the guys that built it. And they're fine guys, whatever. But their workers, a lot of them are actually gay guys that are based in the Philippines. And they know what a dude wants, basically. Mm-hmm. So they're sending out all these messages on a daily basis. So surely OnlyFans or Fansly, whatever page, they can just put in saying no third party involvement. You can only have one account at a time, maybe, right? And I think that's probably coming next, basically.
Listen, I'm not interested in fixing OnlyFans. I totally agree with you, but I'm not, like, that's none of my business. The thing is, you're giving men like virtual access to infinite amounts of non-contextual sexual images. And because of that, mm-hmm. men are going to take advantage of it. They have for years. Now, they haven't for 100 years, because like that type of pornography really started with like magazines back in the 60s and 70s. And then eventually high speed internet once we got into the 2000s. But for the most part, like, yeah, men are going to continue to look at this stuff. And I'm just saying, like, don't do what the rest of the crowd does. Don't be a social media consumer. Don't just sit there and watch commercials. Go to the gym, read books. When the world tells you to do something, consider doing something else. And another thing, and this is going to make a lot of people mad, often when women give you advice, do the opposite and you're going to be outrageously attractive. Often when you do things women ask you to do, they punish you for it. So just, you're going to learn that the hard way. Not all the time, but often that's what you're going to find. And so pay attention to what women are attracted to, not what they tell you they're attracted to. And pay attention to who women sleep with, not what they say they're interested in. You do that, man, you're going to solve so much. And if you ever want, you know, to understand, if you ever want to be around a group of men who have that whole thing figured out, you know, join us at the program. That's what we do every day.
Well, bro, I want to say a massive thank you. I really appreciate this. More to come in the future. I would love to meet you in future, and we record a big session in person. I want to say massive thank you. I appreciate it.